Well, no. Well, more that the article doesn't say ditch the watch and wear two. I mean, we got to get you checked out. Who wears two watches? Are you like running in the Pacific time zone on one hand and the mountain time zone in the other?
Scott, we are very happy to have Path Projects as a partner. We love their gear. We use it all the time. Whether we're on the trail or off the trail, I find myself reaching for the Path.
I was just reminding myself yesterday on my run how just convenient and well organized that back pocket is in their shorts, that I can put my phone back there and it's not bouncing around, but it's very easy to get. It fits perfectly. It's just well thought out gear.
And well, it's durable too. That's one of the things. You invest in a piece of gear, you want it to serve you for years and years. And we've had some of this stuff for years and years, and we have some newer stuff. And I'll tell you what, I can't really tell what's new and what's not new. It all looks the same. And I do wash it after I use it.
You know what I'm excited about, Don, is it's starting to warm up in the Northern Hemisphere are the sleeveless t-shirts. I bought a couple last fall when they were on clearance, and I had some in the package, and I just unpackaged one the other day and walked outside and said, no, I need my regular t-shirt on. It's not warm enough yet, but I'm looking forward to those.
Well, the great news is they have the Pyrenees jacket. So if the weather's changing and you need a little bit of warmth, they have full length tights now. They've got everything really to allow you not to have any excuses not to go out there and run.
You can find them at pathprojects.com. Give them a try if you haven't. Give them as a gift if you have, and surprise your running buddy.
Scott, we need to exercise our editorial rights and make a correction or clarification.
Basically, we made a mistake. Last week, we were talking about our upcoming episode with Ask the Coaches, where we asked you to call a phone number. We gave the wrong phone number.
Whose number was that, Scott?
I don't know, but we apologize. So if you're getting a lot of trail running questions over the past week, sorry. And if you want to ask a question, this is the number you need to call. It is 530-492-5006. That's 530-492-5006. If you're outside the U.S., the U.S. has a +1 area country code.
Now, you've already made this correction on social media, right, Scott? So if you have seen that number on social media, called it, we've got your question.
Yep. But just remember 530. If that's the 530 number, that's the one you want to call. But we're really looking forward to this. We'd love to get some great questions and maybe air some of your questions. We appreciate you calling in and leaving the message. We'll have that episode out later this month.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
But I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards.
Because I just went slow. I mean, I always go slow, but I just did it kind of casual. And
are we ready?
Yeah. I'm recording. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
I'm Andy Jones Wilkins.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And it's been a long time. In fact, Andy was just reminding us we haven't had him on the show since December, since 2020. And it's the third month of 2021. This is crazy, Andy. Where have you been?
I was beginning to worry you guys might have COVID or something.
we wanted a social distance from you, Andy. Right.
Yeah, we've been social distancing on Zoom. I've been doing well, you know, still out here in Arkansas, getting in some running now and then, but it's great to be back on Trail Runner Nation.
Hey, how is running in Arkansas? You know, we talk about running in different spots of the world, different trails, but tell us a little bit about your hometown. If we were to come visit you, what kind of trail would you take us to?
Right where I live right here, there's not much in the way of trails. It's a real agricultural area. So I mainly my day-to-day running's done on on kind of the rolling dirt roads that we have around here. Like a lot of agricultural communities, there's paved roads, and then you just go off the beaten track and can hit a lot of the dirt roads. And then, so on the weekends, I actually have to get in the car and travel, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes or so. But there's Arkansas has just prided itself for years and years and years on its state park system. There, many of them, you almost feel like you're in a national park. They really love their state parks here in Arkansas. And so there's a bunch of them where, and they have great trails. They have good, you know, good amenities, water, bathrooms, campgrounds, all that stuff. So it's really, it's a kind of an outdoor person's paradise. So I have to get to those places to, you know, to get some hills and get some single track trails, but there's pretty good trail opportunities here in Arkansas.
Brought to you by the state of commerce for Arkansas. That was a nice little ad there, AGW.
Hey, Andy, did the state shut down the parks last year at all?
Yeah. In March and April, and even a little bit into May, certainly the entire parks were shut down. Everything from the indoor facilities to the outdoor facilities to even being able to go to the trails. You know, but I tell you what. Again, given Arkansas's pride in their state parks, they worked to get those open as quickly as they could. I remember might have been the end of April. All you could do is go in and go out, like for day use, no campgrounds. All the visitor centers were closed. All the bathrooms were closed. And they had, you know, a ranger stationed at the entrance where you'd go and park and go for your run. And they were keeping track of the numbers of cars going in, even to the point, like, you know, now as they've opened up some restaurants, they have, you know, certain tables that are off limits. They had parking spaces that were coned off because they didn't want people parking next to each other. So they did a great job. And then it seemed like every month before we got into the summer, so that by the time 4th of July rolled around, the state parks were open and fully functioning as they had been before.
You know, that's really smart because science has proven that COVID can be transferred from car to car. So I'm glad that they kept those cars apart from each other.
I think Arkansas is the home of the Arkansas Traveler, the 100-mile run, correct?
Yeah, I think it's got to be like the sixth or seventh oldest 100-miler, but it's in the it's pronounced Ouachita Mountains, which are kind of right in the center of the state, just a little bit west of Little Rock. And yeah, it's and Arkansas, the community that's come, that's emerged out of Arkansas Traveler has been ultra running here, you know, 30, 35 years. And there's a whole series of other races from 50Ks to 50 milers. Later this month, actually, there's a great race, a stage race called 3 Days of Sillamo that has a 50K on Friday, a 50 miler on Saturday, and a half marathon on Sunday. And it's all in the out in the region called Sillamore, which is on the far eastern edge of the Ozark National Forest. So, yeah, because in addition to all the state parks, there's quite a bit of national forest land here. That's great trails and some rolling mountains. Nothing big, you know, nothing, 1,000 feet here, 1,000 feet there, but enough that you can get some good climbing in and get a good days out in the mountains.
What is the expectation for this stage race? Are they modifying the race at all for distance, you know, staying away from people or masks or and how many people do you expect?
Well, they haven't sent out the final instructions yet, but they're limiting it to 70 participants, so that keeps it pretty small. The area that they stage all of the start finish is a huge grassy area, probably the size of, you know, 1.5 football fields with a large pavilion with picnic tables and so forth. So I suspect they'll do a fair bit of protocols there. I'm not sure about the starts, whether there'll be staggered starts or they'll start everybody together and kind of just ask people to get into an order roughly based on where they might expect to finish. But I'm certain that this race has been going on since 2005. It has a really loyal following, the 3 Days of Sillamo. So I suspect there'll be Everybody will be ready to follow the rules. And also, you know, it's in a remote area. No one's going to be staying in hotels. No one's going to be going to restaurants. They're pretty much going to be there and be camped out for 3 days.
Well, that's the episode for this week. Next week, join us for Ohio. We're going to talk about the great state of Ohio and what races are happening there.
Maybe we need to, hey, that's a great idea. Maybe we need to do a series where we go through, you know, maybe start in North America and go state by state. And then we can go up into Canada and do provinces, go over to Europe. And
you trying to kill the show, Scott?
Yeah, yeah. But that's not what we're going to be doing today. Today, we have Andy back. And as always, one of the great things that we just love to do with Andy is just talk. It's so easy to talk to him. And great things come from that. So we are doing not grab bag. We're not going to be doing
audio magazine.
This is drop bag today.
Oh, okay.
This is drop bag. So ease up on the titles there, Freeman. You don't need to be coming up with a creative title. We're just gonna
Let's explain what drop bag is, Scott, because I think if you go back and you replay each and every drop bag audio magazine or what have you, the definition changes every time. So let's get a new definition and get listeners up to speed.
Well, like a drop bag that you would find at an aid station, depending on how type A you are, if you were to look at probably Andy's drop bag, he probably has Tupperwares with little containers and Ziplocs, and everything is labeled with not just handwriting. He probably has a label maker. And then contrast that with Don, that his drop bag probably didn't even make it to the aid station. But if it did, it's just one large plastic bag that he got from the grocery store before they outlawed those, and everything is just thrown in there. So what he does is he goes and he dumps the garbage bag or the plastic bag out, spreads everything out on the dirt, and then just picks what he wants. And each has their benefit, and each of them has their drawback, I think. But this is drop bag, where we just pulled our hand into the drop bag and we pull a topic out and we discuss. Is that a good enough definition?
That was a perfect definition. I think we should actually can that and use it for the future. That was very good.
And since Andy is the guest today, we're going to start with you, Andy. What do you pull out of your drop bag first? What is labeled in your drop bag?
Okay, I'm going to reach in right now. And let's see. It's just, okay, I pulled out. I've got a big Tupperware here. And it says, oh my gosh, I know why this is a big Tupperware. What is racing going to be like in the summer of 2021? Maybe I should just put that back in.
Is that one spoiled? Does it have a little mold growing in it?
It says it right there. What is racing? Good. Let me open it up for a second. Let me see what's in there. Oh, well.
Remember that old Cheech and Chong thing? It smells like dog shit. Yeah. Taste it. I'm not going to taste it. Yeah, taste it.
All right. Well, what will racing be like in 2021?
Oh, boy. You know, that's
a
great question.
That out, right, Scott? We can edit that out.
No, we're not going to edit. Okay. You know, that's an interesting question because I just found out yesterday, because I don't watch the news anymore, that Texas is now open 100%, right? I have a sister that lives there. And so since it's open 100%, I mean, they don't require masks, I guess, anymore.
Whoa.
And we're going to see how that goes. But I would assume that Texas has the monopoly on trail races. I think that we're going to, a lot of us may be migrating south to the border of Texas and jumping in some of their races because they're completely open. Here in California, I know we talked to Julie Fingar, or actually some of her volunteers the other day. We saw them out at Trailhead, and they said that the early races, Way Too Cool 50K, which is one of the largest 50K and oldest 50Ks in the United States, that's not going to happen. American River 50 doesn't look like that one is going to happen, although it's still kind of up. But they're hoping that Rio del Lago 100 Mile, which is a November race, that we'll be in a position where we can hold that. So here in California, at least, it's still really up in the air.
Yeah, I reviewed the most recent runner email that Craig Thornley, the race director at Western States, sent out to the runners that are entered in that race this year. And, they're still hopeful that they can hold their race. They acknowledge that if they are able to hold it, they will have significant, COVID protocols in place. They're not outlining those yet. But as our good friend, Bob Crowley, and his work with ITRA, I mean, the International Trail Running Association, it's about a 28 page guide, I think, to COVID protocols that I know, for example, was used heavily by Jamil Khoury, last month at the Black Canyon 100K, which he held successfully in Arizona. It was a golden ticket race. He held it successfully and it went well. That's an example of one. They took the ITRA recommendations, combined them with what Aravaipa Running had done themselves. And I think it was, and what it amounted to was very, very little traffic at aid stations, very few crew access points, very few crew vehicles, period. Staggered starts, no mass gatherings at a pre-race meeting or a post-race meeting. That may well be the new thing we have to adjust to in the sport for a little while. I think you mentioned state of California, and Texas. I think a lot of the races are beholden to state agencies and what the rules that the states make. Not only about running events, but about any events. And of course, Texas might have different rules than California. And as a result, that might impact what racing looks like.
I wonder if some of these races that were a spring or early summer race will move into the fall. Permitting is going to be an issue with that. But it'd be interesting to run some of those races. They'd be completely different. The weather's different. Trail's different. Would change it up a bit, but I wonder about moving away too cool to, September.
Then it would be like way too hot. I just read an article that our producer, Doug Mayer, wrote about UTMB, and it looks like they're planning on holding the UTMB races as well. So that's good. The international races are coming back.
Yeah, what I read, the recent thing that UTMB sent out. I mean, they've announced their fields. They've, again, similar to Western States, they've said we will have COVID protocols in place. We're not able to say right now what they are, but we ask you to understand. They're already anticipating that they're going to have it be a little bit differently, but they're proceeding as though they're going to go ahead and have that race. All of those races, mind you, that's an entire week of events over there in France.
We sign disclaimers as we go out there to race. Hey, there are rattlesnakes, there are bears, cougars. You could fall off a cliff. There are so many things that can happen to you. They're going to have to change that and put a COVID thing in there and say, hey, take care of yourself. Take your life in your own hands. Decide and make the decision for yourself. I think that's freedom. Make your decision what you want to do.
Yeah, and I think, look, the name of this segment is Drop Bag. All joking aside, I think drop bags are going to play a more important role for racers in long distance events if they're not able to have crews or if the aid stations aren't, flooded with every single little food treat you could ever imagine. We might need to think a little bit more about our drop bags, and certainly mine would be better than Don's.
No doubt. And the drop bag may come into more vogue because there's so many people that come to as your crew. As we're trying to limit people, the drop bag may become a bigger part of racing than in the past.
Yeah, I think so. Hey, Andy, how does this personally play out? As I recall, you got bumped from Hard Rock last year. What does that look like in 2021 for you?
Well, yeah, I'm not in Hard Rock this year because so after they canceled for 2 years in a row, they made the decision to just not roll any. They only rolled over the people who were in the race who'd never done the race before. And for everybody else, they just had a new lottery back in December, and I didn't get in. So I'm gonna go out to your old neck of the woods in Wyoming at a Bighorn 100 miler, which is in June. It's actually the weekend before Western States. So I'll make it a big trip. I'll go out, I'll go out to Wyoming, do the race, and then drive over to California and be around for Western States and then drive home. So
I've heard Wyoming has some strict antelope mask laws, so you'll be fine. Hey, that's kind of cool. You have some unfinished business there at Bighorn, right?
Yeah, you guys might remember you had me on shortly after that. That was where I slipped in the mud and got a concussion.
And, oh, I remember that story.
Yeah, I was able to finish, but it wasn't my, needless to say, it wasn't my finest hour. So yeah, I'm looking forward to being back and Wyoming in June. I mean, it's great there. The days are long. It's beautiful, wide open spaces. There's still a little bit of snow up on the high peaks. It's a great time to be there, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm starting to get my mind around 100 mile training again, since it's a few months away.
Hey Scott, who's next? You or I? Next topic. Well done, AJW.
Go ahead.
Ready to go? Okay. Hey, and believe it or not, we do a little bit of research in trying to find a topic. and as I was researching, I came across an article by a roadrunner that said, hey, ditch the watch. Just run and listen to the rhythm of your body. And then below that, the comments were long and many. And people saying, oh, I did that. Thank you. Had such a great time. Really enjoyed just taking the pressure off of hitting my mark, hitting my pace, seeing what time it was at that turn. They just started running and removing that component. And they really enjoyed it. And so that made me start to think about the gentleman that Scott and I see on a run. And AJW, you've run a lot out here. You've probably seen him too at some point. And he doesn't move fast. I mean, in fact, he's from the days of old where his times were faster because he carries the old water bottle, the old style. I mean, he wears short shorts. He has a 1980 haircut going, and he's not going at the speed of light like he used to, no doubt, but he still enjoys the run. He's bringing in and collecting the trail and all that it has to give, and just not letting expectations, past performances, worrying about what other people say when they see him. He's just loving it, and it just makes me think, as I read through the roadrunners that were ditching the watch, and then thinking to the gentleman that we admire when we see that, you know what? I hope that I can do that. I hope I am doing that. I hope that I'm not pushing off my past performance, whatever it might be, or expectations, or how I want to be perceived, or any of that, and just enjoying the trail for what it is, and hope that we can all do that. And so that was my thought for this topic, one of the two, that we need to just be a little bit easier on ourselves, because certainly we're easier on other runners. We don't cast judgment and say, did you see the speed of that person? We don't do that. We'd think, wonderful, that person's out there. I just want to be able to give the same kindness to ourselves as we extend to others.
Oh, okay, that's all well and good, and it makes me feel warm and fuzzy, Freeman. When was the last time either of you ran without your GPS watch?
Well, I just don't know how to take mine off.
When was the last time, Andy, for you?
I think it was about 5 years ago when I forgot it at home, and so then I had to run with my phone.
Oh. What about you, Freeman? When was the last time you ran without your watch?
Well, I run with the watch, but I don't always set it. I just kind of have it on. So
you're not tracking it. You're just making sure you're home for dinner on time.
Well, all right, Scott. I think let's get to the. I mean, the theme of Don's drop bag here is more to the point.
Hold that thought, Andy, because that's a good one. Hold that thought. Hey, War, how many watches do you wear when you run?
I was going to say there's kind of the other side of the coin, and probably for the last year, I wear two watches. I have my Apple Watch on my left hand because that's my day-to-day watch. I like the networking of my Apple Watch to my Apple ecosystem. And there's some cool things in there as I'm running. You know, I hook that up to Strava. Anyway, and then I have my Garmin watch I put on my right wrist. So people think that I'm a nut when they see me. They go, and it was kind of a running joke. We saw Tim Tweetmeyer out on the trail a couple weeks ago, and he goes, "Hey, War, what's the deal with the two watches?" And I joke. I said, "Well, this way I get double the miles." but to your point, Don, I think that I look at those so often and rely on them. I honestly don't know how I would function if I left the watches in my truck. I don't know. Maybe I should try it.
We're going to try it. AJW, interrupted you. No.
Well, War, the article doesn't say ditch the watch and wear two. We got to get you checked out. Who wears two watches?
Well,
are you like running in the Pacific time zone on one hand and the mountain time zone in the other? What I was saying is that the theme behind Don's point was a good one. You know, when he talked about this octogenarian with the split shorts and the 80s haircut, I kind of felt a little bit like he was talking about me, but I'll just guess that he wasn't. You know, it's that idea of running for running's sake, of enjoying running for running's sake. I mean, I actually have talked about this watch topic with a lot of people because there are some people that are slaves to the watch. And if they don't take it off once in a while, they're just going to overtrain and get injured and everything else. And then there are other people, if they ran without a watch, they'd probably just walk, right? They need the watch for motivation. So I think some of it has to do with their temperament and personality, whether you're a watch person or not a watch person. But zooming above just the watch, you know, running for the sake of running, running for the love of running is something we should never lose sight of as you guys are commenting on observing that fella out there on the trails, because that's really, I mean, at the end of the day, that's really why we all do this.
Yeah, that was a good one, Don. Thanks. And I think I'm going to try that next week. I think I'm going to pick a day and I'm not going to wear a watch and just see if it makes a difference.
You know, Scott, I gave you a pass for the first month figuring, he's checking out the accuracy of his Garmin versus his Apple Watch. That's pretty cool. And then he just kept doing it. And then he kept doing it. I thought, you know, people are going to start to talk. Maybe I should drift back a little bit further behind him because they're going to start talking about me too.
And frankly, Don, you've left me alone. You've never asked me, why are you wearing two watches? He's never asked me that question.
I really don't want to know the answer.
All right. Well, moving on, and I'm gonna kind of make a transition, an easy transition to one of my topics. It wasn't going to be the top one, but I thought, now it will be. Is favorite gear. You know, we are all gear junkies. And I was just thinking the other day, what are some cool new pieces of gear that you are enjoying now? And I had to really dig deep, and I was thinking, you know, there's usually I have something that's new, and I couldn't come up with one right out of the gate. But then I came up with two. And one is, and I realize this is an audio podcast.
I'll take the second one since I can't think of one. If he's going to throw it around the table, Andy, I'm going to put tabs on the second one. Go ahead, Scott.
No, and this is a piece of gear that I think could be a favorite piece of gear, but I've never used it yet on the trail, and I should have. I meant to last weekend when I went into the canyons of Western States, and that is this guy. Have you guys seen this before?
Yep.
Don knows what this is. It's a Katadyn Be Free water filter, and it's a flexible bag. This one happens to be a 0.6 liter bag, and it has a screw-on filter. And the thing weighs 2 ounces. And instead of carrying that heavy bladder on your back if you're on a long run, if you know that there's going to be some running streams or some open water, you can take this thing, 2 ounces, you can fold this up and put it in your pocket, and you can have clean water just by dipping it in there and squeezing it in your mouth. So I think I'm gonna really play with this, and I think that's one of my favorite pieces of gear.
Yeah, that's a good one. As you were thinking gear, what came to my mind is I'm gonna look back in time a bit before Bluetooth became ever present, when we used to have to deal with the wires that used to. What did you do with the wire? You know, you'd knock it out of the MP3 player or the phone. And I know we're supposed to be running and listening to the birds and our breath and our footsteps and all that stuff. But there are times that we listen to a podcast, a book, or some music, and it's so nice to be free from wires. I remember taking the wire and putting it down my back of my shirt to try to make it stealth, not that so others couldn't see it, just so I didn't have to deal with it. And running with a Bluetooth is nice. And so I would say that's one of my favorite pieces of change in gear. How about you, AJW?
I can't think of a new piece of gear that I've gotten in a while, honestly. So I'm going to pivot slightly because, and I've talked about this on this podcast in other contexts before. I'm a little bit of a, I know that sometimes we need to wear our packs, you know, our race vests and so forth. But I'm still in my heart of hearts, a handheld guy. Mm. And I have grown more and more to love my, Nathan handheld. It's an upgrade on the Ultimate Direction handhelds that we all grew up with. The bottle shapes to my hand. The top closes easily. The strap doesn't chafe, my hand. It's the more I use the Nathan handheld, the more I feel, and I'm not sponsored by Nathan by any means, but the more I feel like, gosh, I could just run with this and it's almost like I'm running with nothing. So while I know there's a place for the packs, there's still a part of me that loves the handhelds, and those Nathan handhelds are just, oh man, they just make a huge difference in my enjoyment of running. So that's my favorite current. It's kind of, well, it's not a new piece of gear, but it's a current piece of gear that I'm feeling very good about. Now, we've talked before, one of the challenges of handhelds is not being able to use poles when you have handhelds. And so I don't know if there's anybody out there listening who might be able to get some sort of invention going on how to create a handheld that you can also use with poles. Cause I've tried like putting it around my wrist while I'm using the pole, or sort of holding the pole at the same time as I'm holding the handheld. I haven't been able to do it. So that's, of course, the knock on handhelds. But I'm going to hold out for my daily runs where I'm not using poles. I'm going to go with those handhelds any day.
You know, that actually reminds me back to the ski days. There was a company out there that made ski poles that were reservoirs, and you could put anything in there. And in fact, in many cases, because water freezes, you wouldn't want to put water in there, but you could put something that wouldn't freeze, like maybe an alcoholic beverage. And you'd fill the pole completely with this beverage, and the top of it would pop off, and you could, on the chair ride up, you could take a swig, pop it back on. So maybe that's what we need to do, is have some trail running poles with reservoirs.
You know, there's a full generation of runners out there that have always seen and run with packs. I remember back in the day that you're talking about, there were only handhelds and no packs. And then all of a sudden, packs entered the market, and now everybody seems to have a pack, that, and especially the new generation of runners coming through may not even own a pair of handhelds that doesn't fit in a pack.
It's funny you mentioned that. I mentioned earlier Black Canyon 100K last month, and one of the things that Jamil did was really cool. You guys might have seen it. Did some really good video and drone coverage, live video coverage of the race. Anyway, I was reading along in the chat, And a couple of the people on there were like, what are all these runners in the front doing? None of them have packs. Where do they get their water? And of course, I could have gotten on the chat and snidely responded, but I didn't. And someone else, of course, did and said, you know, well, dumbass, look at their hands. They're holding bottles in their hands. And the guy shut up quickly. But, you know, you see it still, of course, in the front of the pack where weights, you know, Jim Walmsley always has handhelds at Western States and so forth. So, yeah, but there's an entire generation, I think, in at least in ultra years, Don, that they may not know running without a pack. Which is pretty amazing.
There's a lot to think about it. You know, we need a scientist to tell us what is the most efficient. You know, running with something in your hand may require more energy, yet with a pack, you can't dispense the heat off your back, which is important. There's a lot of pros and cons. There isn't a clear path to what the right answer is.
I wanted to ask you, Andy, the Nathan handheld, is that a hard-sided bottle or is that one of the new soft-sided?
I'm still old school, and it's hard sided. Yeah, it's interesting. It's triangular though. So if you would imagine, you know, it's a cylinder, but it's a triangular cylinder. So it has three flat walls. If you think of your hand fitting around two of them, and it's just a great design.
That's great.
I just love it. But yeah, it's hard. I do like the soft flasks that, you know, like the one you showed that go into the pockets of the pack when you use a pack.
On the front.
I'm still a hard bottle guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a hard time with the soft ones changing shape. I kind of liked it to stay rigid and completely in my hands, regardless if it's half full, partially full, or completely full. I like the rigid one. That's my vote.
And for those of you who've been around or haven't been around trail running very much and have never used the hard-sided bottles, we used to call those the airbags. So if you tripped, and I've done this more times than I care to admit, where, you know, you're tripping and you're falling forward, those handheld water bottles can save a lot of scrapes and abrasions because those are the airbags. They're protecting you.
And they'll likely keep the liquid in there, whereas if you fell with one of those soft ones, it might just crush on the rocks and you'd lose all your fluids.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Andy, it's your turn. Oh, well, I do want to appeal to our audience. I love gear and I'm looking for that new piece of gear that I would just get excited about. So if you're aware of any gear that has excited you, any new gear out there, let us know. I'd be interested to know.
Scott, you had a second piece of gear that I was going to try to tag on to.
Oh,
you leave us in the...
Well, this goes back to the Apple Watch. I just read, you know, we're all familiar with the Gaia app or Gaia or whatever you call it, G-A-I-A. Well, Gaia just announced a new Apple Watch app where you can now download the route onto your Apple Watch. You know, instead of pulling out the phone and looking at the map on your phone, which is also probably preferable, you know, because it's a bigger screen. But if you're just running down the trail and you can just look at your watch and look at the map and whether you're on course or not, you know, similar to the Coros or the Garmin or those that have maps on them. I just think that's kind of a cool little thing.
All right, AJW, I think you're up.
All right, let me reach in here again. Go around the side. You know what?
Pick the sticky one. Pick the sticky one, Andy.
This one, I've actually pulled out a magazine, and it came out in January. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it was the 40th anniversary issue of Ultra Running Magazine. And as soon as I got my hands on it, it brought me back to the old days. I mean, 20 years ago when I was a newbie in ultras, every time the Ultra Running Magazine came in the mail, I sat down wherever I was, the moment I had a free time, and I read it cover to cover. And for the first time in many, many years, when I got a hold of this 40th anniversary issue. I did the exact same thing. And for those of you who have not gotten a hold of this, you can download, if you're not a subscriber, you can download the issue for $5 off the internet. You can get the electronic version. You can, if you're old like me, you can print it out and read paper. But it is an incredible, for those of you who are in the sport of ultra running, even if you don't have any interest in the history of the sport, get a hold of that 40th anniversary issue. It tells the story of the sport in ways that I haven't seen it told before. Everything from how the magazine started to the transition from road ultras being the dominant ultras to trail ultras being the dominant ultras. They have a series on runners of the decade through the 80s and 90s and 00s, kind of honorable mention runners from those decades, stories from race directors, the story of Craig Thornley's job interview for becoming the Western States race director is in there. A brilliant writing from Tropical John Mettinger, from John Trent, who's a long-standing journalist in Reno, Nevada, wrote about an experience he had pacing one of his friends at Leadville years ago, and then again at Western States, and chasing the elusive top 10 for that athlete. Just an incredible, incredible trove. And it made me realize more than the stories themselves that, you know, we've developed some history in this sport. And and long before social media and long before, you know, GPS watches, we have a rich, deep history. The story of, you know, Tim Tweetmeyer beating Ann Trason at Western, Ann Trason finishing second overall at Western States. Just some incredible pieces of history that make you kind of, like a lot of history does, make you feel something, that you're part of something larger than yourself, which I think is important for people every so often to realize.
And Ultra Running Magazine was our social media. We didn't have all of these other outlets. So when yours hit the mailbox, that was your chance to connect to your community and find out who's doing what, what's going on, who ran what race. And you could see what some of the folks were doing, or race finishes that happened. How would you know unless you called the race director, say who won, or a friend in that area? It was what connected us through knowledge and sharing tips and results.
And how cool was it? And at least it was for me, the first ultra I completed, to opening it up and seeing my name as a finisher in one of those races, which is something they've continued to do over the years, is having those race results. I just remembered a sense of pride to be included with that group of people, and being, it was really the validation that I'm a tribe member now.
There was something so beautifully simplistic about it as well. You would have a brief description of the race, most of the time written by the race director or another volunteer, and then just the title of the race and the date and the weather, the temperature or something, and then just a list of names. And, you know, in those early years, you'd read that list of names and know most of the people. Mm-hmm. You know, which is part of the reason the folks who started the magazine that wanted it. They wanted to find a way to bring the community together. There was one 2-page spread in this 40th anniversary issue where they had just collected all of these advertisements that had been in the magazine over the years, including like a pair of shoes that already have the toes cut out of them, where you would actually buy the shoes with toes already cut out. I mean, Angelus Pack Company, Succeed, S Caps. I mean, these companies that, you know, have maybe gone away or are not in the as much a part of the sport now, but just the sort of early years. Of course, that was also how you found out what race races were going to happen and when they were going to happen. In fact, some of them, that is where you would print out the entry form and mail it back in a self-addressed stamped envelope so that you could get your confirmation. I mean, it was, you would scour the calendar in the back of that magazine to find what race might be going on in your area next month. So it was just such a great thing right around the new year to receive that and read that. And as you can tell, I liked it so much, I've kept it in my drop bag.
You know, I'm curious if there is a similar periodical that trail runners in Europe or Australia or around the world used. You know, Ultra Running Magazine is primarily a United States-based magazine. And by the way, if you don't have a subscription, go to our deals page, and the people at Ultra Running Magazine have been very generous. There's a discount there if you want to get a subscription to the paper copy. But I wonder if there's something similar in other countries. Are you guys aware?
Well, I think Germany has the Schnitzenspieler or something like that. I don't know.
Here's my other question. When I first got started in ultra running, it was kind of almost pre or about when social media started coming around. But there was an online chat room or I don't even know what you call it anymore, but it was for trail runners, and I think it was based in some university chat room or something. What was it, Andy?
I got you there because that was when I came of age in the early mid 90s. It's the Ultra List Serve.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
And it comes out of Dartmouth University. You're right. It's housed there. And that's where I first learned of Gary Cantrell and Al Howie, the legendary Canadian runner. There were some regular posters, on there, Jim Skophammer. And so the Ultra Listserv was literally a place you'd put your email in, you would sign up for it, and it would be, you would just, if something was emailed to the listserv, you got that email. And it was training questions. It was race results. In fact, the first few years I was in the Western States Lottery, that's where you got the lottery results. Is wow. They would be, the lottery would happen, and they would post them on the Ultra Listserv. And so it was, you know, no pictures, no videos, nothing, just a bunch of runners, you know, telling stories, giving tips, just talking freely. That it, like a lot of early online chat rooms, they had a lot of, well, even current online chat rooms, sort of rules that you had to follow, and kind of, you know, that no anonymous posting and those kinds of things. But man, it was a treasure trove of information and conversation. And many of the old timers around, if there's some listening to this podcast, would certainly remember it. And you know, it was really, really a great source of all through the 90s for me. I mean, 90s was my first decade. My first ultra was in 92. My first 100 was, you know, later on in the 90s. But all through those coming of age years in the sport, that Ultra Listserv and Ultra Running Magazine, those were all I needed.
Yeah, and then early on, in the beginning, run100s.com, that website was, and that was produced by Stan Jensen.
Jensen, and it still exists. It's a very simple website, but incredible amount of information in there.
You know, that really bridged the gap between what's happening now and that Ultra Running Magazine and the Ultra Listserv. It really was a conduit, a place to go find race results, updates immediately, articles, just different things. And it was, I think, should be in the history of the Trail Running Museum, should have a spot there.
Yeah. I've been trying to look it up on the internet if that listserv is still available. It looks like it is, but I forgot my password. I'm going to have to see if I can still log in.
Yeah,
Gene Cantrell's still probably using it.
I understand from David Horton, who, as you know, has been he's a race director in Virginia and won Hard Rock a couple times as a Barkley finisher. I was speaking with him a couple of years ago, and he said it still existed. It didn't have nearly the number of people that used to be on it for obvious reasons, but it's still hosted somewhere in some computer somewhere.
All right. Am I up next?
You're up.
Well, you know, kind of, it seems like I'm following you a little bit there, AJW, because you mentioned Bob Crowley earlier, Ultra Running Magazine, and I came across Bob's recent article in Ultra Running Magazine called Heart, Head, and Soul, The Future of Trail Running. And he went through and he talked about the head, you know, that the sport is growing 12% year over year globally. So it's an expanding sport. And then he talked about the heart, about trail running being an exclusive group. And we don't try to exclude anybody, very welcoming. Anybody can join, doesn't matter size, shape, it doesn't matter your running form, you're welcome to come out and run, and we'll all support one another. And then he talks about the soul, is the motivation, the why behind what we do when we're out there. And it started to make me think a little bit. And I recommend, and Scott will post it in his show notes. Right, Scott? Can you do that?
Maybe.
And I encourage everyone to read it, because I'm not going to talk about each one of the tenets and points that he makes, because it's a great read. He calls himself not a scribe, but as it turns out, he writes very, very well, and I encourage people to read it. But I started thinking about why the growth. And, you know, society is distancing itself from what we were intended to be as hunters and gatherers. We're more in a electronic world, sophisticated. You know, we have shopping centers, we have vehicles, we have, you know, comforts of lighting at night. We have all of these things. And I think the trail calls us back to a familiar place where our DNA really sings as we travel through those miles. That deep inside, even though society changes as we're looking around, our insides don't change as fast as the things outside. And we talked with Dan Lieberman about that, the evolutionary biologist. Listen to that recent episode with Mark Cucuzzella. Really, really good. He's a thinker and a thought leader in this, and thinks anthropologically, who we are, why we are, and how we interact with the world based on our evolutionary process. Really, really fascinating. And I think that's what we see in the trail. I think we really have a moment to go back and touch who we are and what we're built for. We're probably more intended to travel the trail than travel the local highway. And I think that's why the sport's growing 12%, globally, because of that. Any thoughts on that, gentlemen? whoever's editing this, leave that pause out, leave that pause in, because I think it's very telling. Go ahead, gentlemen.
You did such a great job of summarizing the article, Don.
I don't think it was a very good summary. And I think if you read the article, you'll think, where in the heck did Don even get any of these points? It's like he didn't even read the title.
He read the title and made some assumptions. We came off of this evolutionary biologist Daniel Lieberman podcast, which he wrote this book called Exercised, and it left an imprint on me as well as I think Don, and it kind of made you think back of really what are we designed to do physically and mentally, and I can appreciate that, Don. Thank you.
I think one of the things that resonates with me, Don, with what you said, is not only that aspect of evolutionary biology, but also how we get grounded in certain places, that notion of having a strong sense of place and running in some of our favorite places brings that out in us. I back in December, every year in December, I have a dialogue with Brian Powell and Megan Hicks, who are the editors of irunfar.com, which is a website I write for. And I like to do a series every year, a monthly series. And we were bouncing ideas around. And ultimately, what I landed on was what I'm calling the Trail Love Letter series, where each month I choose a specific trail or a specific section of trail somewhere in the United States and basically write the history of it, write kind of a love letter to that piece of trail. And I think we all, if we've been at it long enough, we have those places. You know, obviously for me, there's parts of the Western States Trail that are like that. For you guys, it's like there are places like that, you know, and that those that bring the best out of you, that you feel at home in, that you feel in terms of that evolutionary biology, that they're a place that makes you who you are. And as I've been working through this series, I have the third one coming up this Friday, because it's the third month. It's just fun in researching these trails and talking to people for whom they are, they're kind of sacred ground, how important that is, those places that we call home when we're out doing what we love.
Your comments made me think about this evolutionary biologist type of viewpoint. Nature, nurture, certainly I'm going to lead with that, with that term, that if we look back and listed all of our favorite places to run and the places that we feel most at home and enjoy the most, could we then predict and look back to where our people came from? Maybe nature, nurture, I get it. You know, the first time you're exposed, maybe it was a great canyon, a great downhill, a wonderful environment. You just felt good that day, so you're attracted to that. But maybe you're a mountain person. Maybe you love to run in the desert. Maybe you love just flat stuff. And it might call back to your people, whoever they may be. Just an abstract thought. I think a message that Bob hid inside of that article brings out a little something different in everybody. So I think he was playing five-dimensional chess, which is what Crowley does a lot of the time.
Hey, Andy, tease us a little bit. What is this month's article on? What trail or section?
This month is the Appalachian Trail. And it's the particular section that is in central Virginia that covers Three Ridges and the Priest. And for those who aren't familiar with it, they're two of basically the biggest mountains on the entire Appalachian Trail. If you go up Three Ridges and down, and up the Priest and down, you cover 7,500 feet in 19 wow. miles. Oh. And it's just an iconic piece of trail that, every local accomplished ultra runner, you know, from David Horton all the way up to the present has been on Priest Three Ridges. So, it's exciting. I just sent it in to Megan this morning. It's got some pictures. It's, got some information about who has the FKT and when the best time, this is the best time to run it, sort of early spring. It just started. It's still winter at the top. It's starting to be spring down at the bottom. So I did an Arkansas trail, the Sillamore Trail last month. Obviously I'll do my favorite section of the Western States Trail in June, a section of the Hard Rock course in July, section of the Wasatch course in September. So it's going to be a fun series.
You're linking them to the times that people are running them. I can see that,
the times when their race is going on, that would be on that section of trail. I try to have the article be that month. There are no races on the Appalachian Trail. But of course the March is just such a training time in Virginia. And I think I tried to move them around the country. As Brian said, we try to have every time zone represented a couple of times in each of the trail love letters.
Good, good. We'll look forward to reading those.
Yeah, so check it out. It's the first Friday of every month, you know, for the whole year.
And we'll make sure we link that in the show notes because
that's right, yeah.
Don, that's only place Don looks for information about the podcast is in the show notes.
That's my homepage, Scott. Your show notes are my homepage.
Hey, to round it out, I'm gonna be real short, but it kind of parlays on Don's topic and the whole idea of exercise in this book and talking to Dan Lieberman about that we never evolved to be exercising machines. And it really it struck me personally because I'm in trying to be in a good training routine right now and trying to be disciplined in my training. And there are many days that I just don't want to get up and do the run. And Dan Lieberman talks about if you're in the airport and there's an escalator and a set of stairs, we evolved to take the escalator, the easy way out, and not the stairs. And I really appreciated that because it makes me feel not as guilty as it did before, where I thought, you know what, I really don't want to get out there, but I'm a trail runner. I got to do it. How come I'm having these feelings? And it reminded me of a couple articles that I read recently, and I'll tell you about these because I think that if you have those feelings, these two resources have helped me out. One is a TED Talk by Christine Carter. She said she got into what she calls a one better than nothing behavior. Mm. One better than nothing behavior. And this is what it was. If she was supposed to run that day and she didn't feel like it, rather than sitting on the couch and eating Cheetos, she would go out and run for 1 minute. Because running for 1 minute is just a little bit harder than not running at all. And she would, some days she would go out, run a minute and go home. And other days she would go out and run for 1 minute and it would turn into 2 minutes, into 30 minutes, and she'd get her run done. And I really derived inspiration from that. And then parlaying on that is our friend Brad Kearns, who was a elite level Ironman athlete. And he has a YouTube clip, and of course I'll link these in the show notes, Don.
Thank you.
He calls the Brad Kearns morning routine, and it starts in the bed. He wakes up and it starts in the bed, and it's very simple. It takes very little time. It's the one better than nothing behavior kind of thing that he's taken, and it takes maybe 5 minutes, and it just starts his day out right. So he says, if I get up and I'm not feeling like running, I know that I have to do this because it's going to take 5 minutes. I'm already laying in bed. That's where it starts. And he says, inevitably, he starts this routine not feeling like he wants to exercise. He does the routine. It takes 5 minutes. And then he says, you know what? I roll out of bed and I want to do it. I want to get that training done. So that's my final topic.
Brad Kearns' podcast called Get Over Yourself. And very, very good. He's been doing it for a while. We've had him on the show before. And he's been somebody our community, endurance community, has looked towards because he just has great advice, you know. And he's ridden with Lance Armstrong back in the day. He was a professional, world-ranked triathlete. But endurance is the name of his game. Good decisions are and practical advice is what he gives to allow us all to continue loving what we do.
Hey, Scott, I think I like the one is better than none a lot. What would be hard for me is at my age and stage, it takes me about 5 minutes to put my shoes on. And so, I mean, well, by that time, would that count? I just put them on?
Well, here's the way I have evolved it for me is my one better than nothing is 1 mile. So if there's a day, I'm still trying to get all the creaks and the stretches out after 1 mile, but I inevitably, and Don and I have talked about this, there are days I just don't want to get it done, and I'm sure you guys are the same way, but there has yet to be a run that I've completed and at the end of the run thought, well, that was a waste of time. I shouldn't have done that.
So here's my version of that, because it's very similar. It in where I currently live in my daily run, you know, because I hear you. You get to that. You got it. I feel like you've got to give it 5 minutes, let's say. So I'm out the door. I'm around the corner. I'm going down the road. And there's a point it hits at about 5 minutes where I cross a main road and then a railroad track. And I'm off into the dirt roads. And then it's a 6-7 mile run. If I'm not feeling it, I turn right on that main road and I'm back at my house in 5 more minutes. Right. And then the run, and it's 1 mile and the run's over. So I think that's a good interpretation of it that, and if you have that bailout option, I think a couple of years ago when we had Courtney DeWalter on the podcast, she talked about that because she doesn't ever have a plan and so forth, but she'll go out the door and she'll get to a point where it's like, well, if I go this way, it'll be a 14 miler. And if I go this way, it'll just be a 5 miler. I think those kind of bailout options are good, but as long as you have to go far enough to make sure you really need to bail out, or you could just go across those railroad tracks and keep going.
Well, here's my version of it. AJW, maybe you can identify with this. In my advanced age, I'm laying in bed and I go, gosh, I got to get up and go number one. That's my number one rule,
and that's better than doing nothing.
Number two, I'll tell you that.
You know, this, we need to change the name of this podcast to the what's your word, octogenarian podcast. Sounds like we're a bunch of old guys that can't get up without hearing creaks in our joints. Hey, that was a fun drop bag. I appreciate that. I always have fun talking about them. I wonder if people find as much joy listening to these as we have talking about them.
I wonder if anybody made it to the end of the podcast.
Hey, Andy, thanks for joining us. Let's not let another 2 or 3 months go by before we get you back on. We really enjoy you. We thank you for everything that you bring to this podcast.
Yeah, this is fun. I was thinking it might be due time for one of those choose one word podcasts. You know, maybe in a month or so we can do one of those, because those have always been fun. And you know, maybe as we get into spring, that might be something people are into.
All right, guys. Hey, thanks very much. We hope that you enjoyed it. We hope you had some fun. Hope you had a little laugh if you were listening to it while you're running down the trail. Hope you didn't trip and use those airbags that you have in your handheld bottles. Get out and run, though. That's the important thing. Get out and run.
Mass.
We'd like to thank our listeners for making us the number one downloaded running podcast in North America and many other countries, too.
And a special thanks to our new Patreon supporters. If you want to support us, go to our website and click that support us tab at the top. We have a lot of really cool benefits, including the Coccapelli 1000, which is a race that will blow your mind, and our bonus miles, which we have recorded with Andy Jones Wilkins this week. Make sure you don't miss that. We want to give special thanks to our business Patreon member, Doug Crumley, with Ameriprise.
Think of Doug as your pacer or crew for your finances, because he will take care of you.
You can find him at Doug Crumley Jr., DougCrumleyJr.com. It takes a team to produce Trail Runner Nation. We want to especially thank our show producer, Doug Mayer, who lives in Chamonix, France, and he runs a cool company called Run the Alps. It's a guide service that will give you the most memorable running vacation you can possibly imagine, running through the Alps. Make sure you don't miss this week's Bonus Miles with Dr. Mark Gazella, where we talked about a lot of really cool things before the podcast actually started. You can get all of the Bonus Miles as an ambassador-level Patreon sponsor. Stay tuned for next week's episode. Run, Moss.